From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. We are almost there, folks. I promise. Election Day is just 4 days away. We're going to talk about how major population changes might affect who gets elected to the Georgia legislature.
Everyone talked about demographic changes as if they were magical, as if somehow that meant that naturally government structure and the composition of those elected was just naturally going to change or become more progressive or democratic. And that hasn't been the case.
That's coming up. First, though, we heard from several Georgia comedians yesterday, George Wallace, Amber Nash, and Dulce Sloan. And we asked, what makes or who makes you laugh? Here are your first thoughts.
My name is Eric Fritch. I'm calling from Savannah, Georgia. And I just heard a request for my favorite comedian. So he's actually a local guy, but his name is Chris Davidson. And he's really smart and really funny. And he's a great comic.
Adam Dean tweets this, perfect show for this morning. With election malaise fully taking hold, laughter is essential this week. Thank you. We always love to get your recommendations and your thoughts, so call us at 404-500-9457 and leave us a message like Eric did. You can also find us on Twitter at OST Talk or on Facebook, and we might feature your comments on the show. We wanted to give a quick update to a story that we brought to you recently. You may remember Lynn Wyatt. We spoke to her in August about how her brain cancer has been treated with a breakthrough procedure called gamma knife radiosurgery.
I've had 21 brain lesions in about a two-year time frame, which,
holy cow.
Yeah, it usually freaks people out, right? But because of Gamma Knife, I'm standing here running a very normal life. I'm part of PTA. I'm very active in schools. I'm active in tennis. And it's all because Gamma Knife, and it's not because chemo will debilitate you. Surgery in your head is going to debilitate you, at least for a certain time frame. Gamma Knife, I walk out of my medical center and I get back to my life the next day.
Her friend Martha Warren, who works here at GPB, let us know that Lynn had another brain surgery yesterday. Based on my conversation with her, though, it is clear that Lynn Wyatt is a fighter.
Not everybody gets to this point. You get to this point where you either fight it or you go back to bed. And every single time, I've got two young children who are 12 and 9, you fight it. There just in my life is no other option.
We wish Lynn Wyatt a very speedy recovery. You can find that interview from On Second Thought at gpbnews.org. Gwinnett County is not all white, but its county commission is, and it always has been. The Gwinnett Board of Commissioners has never had a non-white member. But that could change this year. For the first time in history, white voters no longer make up the majority of Gwinnett's registered voters. And that could possibly tip the scales for one African-American county commission candidate, Democrat Jim Shealy. GPB's Sam Whitehead reports.
Hey, Sam, how you doing?
Okay.
All right.
Hi.
The weekday rush hour winds down as Democrat Jim Shealy schmoozes voters on a restaurant patio in Norcross. They're here to hear his pitch for why he should be the next Gwinnett County Commission chair.
You know, I think that anybody in public office should always think towards the next generation.
Shealy's a one-issue candidate. He wants to develop a light rail system to help reduce Gwinnett's bad traffic. But there's something else on his mind, the all-white county commission.
I mean, something's wrong with that picture. In a county that's 53% to 56% minority.
Actually, the latest census data say 58% of the county's population is non-white. Shealy believes the lack of representation means minority concerns don't get heard.
In a way, I don't think black and white. I think right. You know, so if I see something wrong, then I want to try to change it.
Bottom line is, are the community's interests being spoken to? Right now, the answer is no.
Jerry Gonzalez is executive director of the Georgia Association of Latino Elected Officials. His group and others are suing the county commission for new electoral districts. They say we'll give minority voters more of a voice.
It doesn't matter if we register a bunch of people to vote if their power to be able to exercise that vote is diluted.
I think that we're trying very hard to be a welcoming place and to make it good for everybody that's here.
Republican County Commission Chair Charlotte Nash is a defendant in the lawsuit. She's also Jim Shealy's opponent for the at-large seat. We spoke at a fall festival in Duluth. Think crowds, crafts, and carnival food. She declined to comment on the suit, but said the commission had done its best to accommodate a changing population.
a community is just like a living organism. If it's not growing and evolving, then eventually it's going to be destroyed. It can't survive unless it evolves.
Her main campaign issue? Fiscal responsibility as Gwinnett continues to grow and diversify. As for what that growth and diversity could mean for her re-election chances?
I think that's in the hands of the voters, and the voters have the power to make the decisions this time about who's elected.
There are, of course, moments where we can expect people who don't look like a particular group can actually make good decisions on behalf of everyone.
Michael Owen studies race and politics at Emory University.
A question, though, is does that always happen? No, it does not.
He's not surprised by the lawsuit over Gwinnett's voting districts. Owen says there are only so many ways for people to change the electoral process.
You can take to the streets. You could attempt to try to influence the state legislature, who ultimately decides whether maps are good or not. Or you rely upon the courts.
Then, of course, there are elections. Jim Sheely isn't running on a redistricting platform, but a win would break the Gwinnett County Commission's color barrier. He says the key will be turnout.
It's not going to be easy to get to make sure that people get to the polls, get them out there to vote.
But the numbers could be in his favor, if just barely. About 52% of registered Gwinnett voters are non-white. For GPB News, I'm Sam Whitehead in Atlanta.
Let's stay in Gwinnett County for a few minutes more. Brenda Lopez is expected to become the first Latina elected to the Georgia General Assembly. It's because she's unopposed in the race for House District 99, and that includes the Norcross area of Gwinnett County. It's the only Georgia legislative district with a Latino majority. Brenda Lopez came to the U.S. from Mexico when she was 5 years old, and her family has lived in Metro Atlanta ever since. Brenda Lopez joins me. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
So we heard your voice a little bit earlier saying that there's a presumption that when demographics change, it changes politics. You don't think that's true. Why?
Well, I believe that's actually far from the truth. If we only look at examples of where demographic shifts are occurring, not just in our state, but nationwide, because what you need is to engage that demographic shift, particularly if we're referring to Gwinnett County, where the biggest growth has been within the Latino and Asian American communities that haven't had a history. They're mostly first generation, second generation growing up American here in our state and in our country. So it requires a lot more effort and a lot more work to engage and include these growing populations into every aspect of society, but particularly civic engagement and political process.
So you're running unopposed, so I'm not going to waste any time talking about the campaign. But let's talk about some challenges that you might face when you get into the legislature. This is a comment from the Democrat Pedro Marin, who goes by Pete. He's up for re-election in House District 96. That includes the Duluth area. He was first elected in 2002. He was the first Latino in the state legislature. But here he is speaking to Latino USA from NPR, talking about the fact that there was an ethics complaint filed against him days after he was sworn in.
The complaint was that I was a Mexican federal government agent infiltrated in the Georgia General Assembly. And we explained everything. And of course, it was thrown out because it was a bogus complaint. Number one, I'm Puerto Rican. And number two, I've never been in Mexico.
So I'm not saying that kind of things might happen to you, but it could be a challenging environment. How do you prepare for that?
Well, I think that just growing up is the process of preparing for it. It's nothing new. That's not a new experience. Even within within the time that we've been campaigning, including up to today, we've had a lot of negative comments. Whether it's on social media, I've had people email me in a tone that, let's say, is less than respectful and friendly. And so
have you been threatened?
No outright threats. Things along the lines of one of the ones was comment whether I was here illegally, which of course doesn't make any sense, right? And of course, for some reason, I've had lots of posts said something along the lines, it's the beginning of the end. Again, I'm not sure really what that means. But, just along those lines, we actually haven't had any direct or direct threats. But, I have had people call and basically yell the whole conversation about why I had no business running, or that Mexicans were destroying their country, or that I am assuming they meant the literature that we were canvassing and passing out, that they didn't want to see my trash all over their subdivisions. So, just these things are just common unfortunately, commonplace and common experience.
Well, then let's talk about specifically what you might be discussing when you get to the legislature. The legislature in Georgia here passed several measures during the last session that many organizations felt were discriminatory, especially to immigrants. Here's Republican State Senator Josh McCune. He sponsored a resolution that wanted to establish English as the state's only official language. There was also a bill that required immigrants who are part of the deferred deportation program to carry driver safety cards that displayed their immigration status. He explained all this to Latino USA.
If you're going to come to Georgia, you need to have legally entered the country. And to me, that's not just a Republican principle. That's sort of a bedrock American principle that we expect people to follow the law. We expect people to respect the law.
Do you feel that there is a pressure on you to suddenly be the representative? Since you're the only Latina, does that make you the spokesperson for Latinas in Georgia?
I would say, unfortunately, that tends to be the case. It's not necessarily a position anyone ever wants to have because there's lots of different voices and opinions within even the Latino American community. But yes, it's something that naturally happens.
You were talking earlier about demographics maybe not changing politics. And I wonder if you feel that the Democratic Party, which usually attracts a large number of not just Latino and Hispanic, but immigrant votes, if you feel the Democratic Party has actually served those communities well.
I think for our purposes here in the state of Georgia, I think even within the Democratic Party, I think we're lacking in a full forth effort to integrate communities. Again, not mainly because everything is new, and it's new for everybody, and it's also new for the political parties, actually for both of them, as much as it's new for the new immigrant communities. So I think more work needs to be done, most definitely, both from the party. But it's sort of there's not one thing that's going to make this inclusion, right? One of the reasons that I think we've seen this surge, particularly here in the state of Georgia, in the context of both the Asian American community and the Latino American community, is a combination of what's going on with the presidential election and what the two candidates have to offer. But at the same time, we've had about 10 to 15 years of a lot of grassroots community advocacy organizations in both Latino and Asian communities that have heavily been pushing civic and voter education, that have been pushing voter registration, that have been pushing get out the vote efforts. So I think that at this point, part of the reason that we see the growth isn't only because of the presidential candidates and choices that we have amongst them, but rather it's a sort of all encompassing. And we're also getting to a critical point mass where our numbers are beginning to matter in terms of electoral politics.
That's kind of understating they're going to matter, especially in the next 10 years or so, possibly one of the most powerful voting blocks. So then in the minute that we have left, no spanner is thrown into the works, what's your priority when you first step into the legislature?
Well, our campaign vision was basically bridging our neighborhoods to our government. And actually, more than anything else, I want to continue doing that work of precisely engaging and integrating not just District 99, but Gwinnett County, actually, generally, into the political process. Getting people basically even to show up at our Capitol, because it's our Capitol, and we need to feel free and have that space to show up whenever we want to talk to any of our legislators. So honestly, a lot of my work efforts are going to be in the work that I've done before, which is that community development.
You're trying to get people to care about government. That's a tough sell. My guest is Brenda Lopez. She is expected to be the first Latina elected to the Georgia General Assembly Tuesday. She is the only candidate in House District 99 in Gwinnett County. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
There are millions of blogs on the internet, and only a very select few actually rise to attract millions of readers and influence society. Awesomely Lovey is one of those blogs. It's written by comedian and activist Lovey Ajayi. She's now put something down on paper instead of the internet, and it's her book called I'm Judging You, The Do Better Manual. And she joins us now. Thanks so much. It's good to see you.
Yes, glad to be here.
So you told NPR, and I want to read your quote here.
Yeah.
You said, quote, people love my voice because they say I say what they were thinking but dared not to say because they have a filter or a job.
Yes.
So isn't that the same thing people say about Donald Trump?
Yeah, see, except Donald Trump comes from a place of hate and no facts. Like, so there's two types of keep it real people. The people who are like, oh my God, I keep it real, who use it as an excuse to say hateful things and just the most awful things in the world. That's the Donald Trumps of the world. I'm the person who's in the room that points out that thing that you were thinking, but we're like, I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to be impolite. So I'm the person who's probably like, I don't know if that's a good idea in a room full of people in a meeting. And everyone else was like, oh my God, I'm fine. I'm so glad somebody finally said that. Or that guy's actually a pretty terrible human being. And everyone's like, we agree. Glad you said it first.
So how did you decide after all these years to turn those blogs into a book?
So my book is not even a series of blog posts. It's a series of essays. But I came with the idea because I got the idea, actually, August 4th, 2014 at 6:56 p.m.
You're going to tell me why you remember that.
That exact time. It's because, so on that day, I got plagiarized by a journalist, and I put this in quotation marks, who lifted about three paragraphs of my work. My audience knows my voice no matter if I write something and didn't put my own name on it. They're like, that sounds like a Lovey thing. So I woke up to like three or four emails from people who were like, hey, I just read this thing that sounded just like you. And they gave me the link. And I click on it. And I was like, that's because that is me. So I go on a massive Twitter, Facebook blog rant.
Yeah, it was big.
Right? It was huge. About how like plagiarism is just the lowest common denominator. Like, why would you do that? And you consider yourself a journalist. So the guy's mentions was in shambles. Like, everybody was like, dude, seriously? Because I showed everyone kind of like the side by side. And he took notice. He emailed me and was like, oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to do that. I was like, what? So I tweeted, is there a limited edition handbook that some of us didn't get, you know, one on how not to be terrible human beings? And I pressed post and I was like, oh, that's the book I'm supposed to write. So that's the book I wrote.
This is supposed to be the handbook on how not to be a terrible human being.
Exactly. So that's what I wrote eventually in I'm Judging You, the Do Better manual.
Yeah. And to a certain extent, your blog is based on making judgments.
Yeah, absolutely.
But do you come from a place where you feel as though they're the judgments that the vast majority of society agrees with? Or is it a racial thing? Is it more like this is what the vast majority of people that I know and like agree
with?
No,
I think it's a universal. This is how people should be judged. Like, this is how people think about the world. My audience spans
all types
of ages, races, gender identity, sexual orientation. Like, I have probably some of the most diverse audience in blogosphere. And the power of that is that people see universal truths in my writing. Like, you don't have to look like me or be who I am to read my writing and understand and relate to it and be able to see yourself in it.
So one of the more popular things that you do is recaps of Scandal. And I noticed you've started to do it with Issa Rae's Insecure as well.
Yeah.
How do you do a good recap?
Oh, man. So I also recap Game of Thrones.
Right.
How I do a good recap, live tweeting is actually really helpful for me when I do recaps.
Because you go back.
Because I go back and I use my live tweets as outlines, especially for Scandal. And you know how things are like granular and you blink, you miss a detail. A lot of times when I'm live tweeting, I end up going back to my live tweets to know exactly what happened when something was going on. And then I also have some of the most thorough like recaps in.
Yeah.
On the internet, basically. So people who've never watched some of these shows that I recap will say, oh, like, I know exactly what happened. Or I watched Scandal through your recaps. Like, and I was like, wow. So I think I skipped three episodes of Scandal because I was crazy busy in the spring. And people were like, I'm so behind on Scandal because you haven't written your recap yet. So, yeah, you just have to be really thorough. You have to draw people in. I use a lot of GIFs, too. So,
and you call it GIFs.
I say GIFs, not the GIFs. I say GIFs. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then how was the experience when you coming from a place of so much immediacy, immediate reaction and immediate writing?
Yeah.
How then was the process different when you sat down to write a book?
Kind of difficult because I'm so used to immediate feedback.
Yeah.
But then here I am in a silo, basically in a vacuum of my own, churning out words that won't get feedback for a year, literally. So that was really different. And I was like, is this good? I'm like, okay, don't worry about it. Just keep writing. If it's not good, my editor will tell me it's not good. And then I turned to my manuscript and my editor was like, this is really good. So I was like, score. And then the book finally came out, which felt like forever, but also felt really quick. It came out September 13th and the feedback was bananas. Like, people loved it and were sharing it with their friends. People bought multiple versions of it because I also did my audiobook. So a lot of folks were like, oh, at first I read the physical copy. Then I was like, no, I got to read this in her. I got to hear this in her actual voice. So people have been, man, they've been showing so much support for this book and love for this book.
So that means that you'd be willing to write a second.
I would be willing to write a second. I think the nicest note I've received about this book so far was from somebody who emailed me a couple of days ago and said my book literally saved their life. She said she's bipolar and she was having a manic episode. So her boyfriend grabbed the book, which was sitting on her nightstand, and started reading it to her. And she was like, "You're funny," literally pulled me out of a manic spiral. I was like, holy smokes. So yeah, that was an amazing note to get.
Lovey Ajayi is the author of I'm Judging You, The Do Better Manual. She also writes the blog Awesomely Lovey. She'll sign copies of her book tonight at 6 at the Grand Hyatt Hotel in Buckhead. That's part of the Blogalicious Conference in Atlanta. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool.
It has been a long week. We learned about the state's ongoing drought. We explored some lost towns in North Georgia, and we heard some sweet sounds from indie musician Kishibashi. But as we do every Friday, it's time to gather a group of smart people with us, kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck has happened this week. It is time for The Break Room.
The idea behind transportation companies like Uber and Lyft is to provide everyone with an easy, convenient ride. But it turns out that it's tougher for some passengers to get rides than others.
I bring you today the Greater Birmingham Humane Society's first ever cat yoga class.
I'm a millennial voter, and get me interested in voting. Okay, because it's like, I don't even know if there is like any point in voting.
Joining us in the break room this week, Jordan Stepp of the Athens Music Junkie blog. Hi, Jordan, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Great. Also in studio, we have Korean Daily reporter H.B. Cho, Greg Williams of the conservative radio show Greg's List, and a warm welcome back to the break room for Natalie Dale, spokeswoman for the Georgia Department of Transportation and a new mom. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thanks. I'm so excited to be back. It's been a long 6 months without you.
Yeah, it's been months and months. Well, our first topic is about a medical breakthrough that seems like it has been a very long time coming.
When it comes to birth control, females have 11 options, but males, exactly 2, and one of them is permanent. Shouldn't there be some male options by now? Come on, science, it's 2016!
Okay, scientists have developed a male birth control shot. It is almost 96% effective, but researchers put the brakes on studying it after the male subject reported negative side effects that included mood swings, altered libido, and acne. If that sounds familiar, it's because those are some of the more mild side effects of actual birth control that women take all the time. So should men be complaining about this? And we have two women with us, so guys, I'm going to go to the women first. I should say, though, there has been some complaints saying it was worse for the men, but in fact, in the male birth control test, 4.7% of men experience mood swings, whereas an IUD that women currently use, 5.2% of women experience mood swings. And it's kind of similar across the board. So, Natalie?
Well, the first thing that really cracked me up about this was, you've seen those commercials where they rattle off that long list of everything that can happen to you.
And death.
I was about to say. Some of them had death as a side effect, and they still went through with the research. This one was a headache and some crabbiness, and they stopped the research, which just goes to, when my husband gets a cold, you think his arm has been cut off. And then, sorry, guys, you just can't hack it the way we can when it comes to some aches and pains. And so it's unfortunate that they decided to cancel or to call off the research when there's a great benefit here. And there really is a need.
Yeah. Jordan, what do you think?
I think part of it is the fact that this is just what women have been saying about birth control for ages, and it takes men complaining about headaches and acne and not feeling well before, you know, you go, oh, hey, maybe birth control has some side effects. And we're all sitting over here screaming, yes, yes, this is what we've been trying to tell you.
Yeah.
So it's unfortunate. I really don't want anyone to experience any side effects like that. but it's kind of infuriating that it takes the opposite gender to bring this to the forefront.
Okay, guys, now it's time to speak up for yourselves.
HB, you go first. I want to see where you go, and then I'll follow.
All right.
Deal or no deal?
Deal. Okay. And by taking the deal, I'm gonna sound really horribly ignorant about this issue. But my understanding was that women also are trading menstrual pain with the side effects of the pill.
Oh, no, you still get a period.
It's longer. Is it?
I welcome your opinion, but I think the trade-off was actually pregnancy.
That's why I let HB go first.
Which is 9 months of fun.
We should just not talk about this.
If we can't talk about it, we'll never get through it.
I was about to say, it sounds like men are being injected with estrogen for this this birth control, right? So, I mean, they're basically taking on the symptoms. I don't know exactly what the drug is that they're being put in, but it must have something to impact the swimmers, if you will, right? The resilience of the swimmers. I think it's a little bit risky as well, though, because a lot of males, you know, they practice contraception, so they don't want to have a child, but that doesn't necessarily protect them from an STD. And so, you know, the easier it is to not take responsibility, the more risky the behavior can be. So I don't know. Did I complain too much there?
No. It's all good. We got Stephanie Clark. We got a tweet from Stephanie Clark who says the complaints over male birth control are, as she says, actually slightly entertaining. And then Sam Burnham says, all these moody people, men and women on Earth, and we're saying that meds are causing it? I think that's a rhetorical question there, Sam. Let's move on. We have at least one cat lover on the OST staff. He even walks his kitty on a leash. Sean. But that is nowhere near the strangest thing you can do with your kitty. There is growing interest, at least in Birmingham, Alabama, in something called cat yoga. A group of women met there to do yoga with their furry friends, and there was singing.
Everybody, everybody is a cat. Everybody, everybody wants to be cats. Meow, meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Okay, so would you take an exercise class with your pet, cat or not?
I would never try to keep up with a cat in yoga. Have you seen what they can do on couches?
Yeah,
even dogs are like gymnasts, basically. So, I think it's a terrible idea. Bring your dog to the gym, put him on the treadmill, let him run with you. But you can do
to bring my dog to the gym.
That would be kind of cool, wouldn't it?
I'd like to let my dog out in the backyard, which is a dog gym. I work out with my dog all the time. It's called outside, on a leash,
in the
backyard. This is the
pragmatism of our new mom.
Yeah, I know. I figure it out so much. I just, cats, they're bendy, and I bet they do enjoy yoga. The cats I know would sleep through yoga. So is this really effective?
Has your dog been jealous of the new baby?
No, but they're just starting to be friends. Friends.
Jordan, what do you think? Cat yoga?
Well, I think my cats would sleep through it, honestly. But yeah, I would totally do cat yoga as long as they didn't play the little jingle
song
the entire time. That would drive me insane.
That's my question.
How expensive is cat yoga? Yeah.
I don't know, but we are getting a cat cafe in Atlanta. So.
Oh my God.
That's so
Natalie
awesome.
Dale just glared at me. She just glared at me.
No, it wasn't me glaring at you. It was my allergies glaring at you. My allergies came through.
All right. Hashtag team dog. So let's move on. We have about 2 minutes left, so let's talk about a smoking lounge for women. We talked about earlier a women-only membership club for women who want to eat chicken wings without having men judge them. Now there is an exclusive lounge for women to smoke cigars. It's called the Smokin' Hot Ladies Club in Jackson, Mississippi. So what's going on here? Is ladies only becoming a trend? Let me start with the guys on this.
Maybe.
They are reluctant to answer.
Well, I mean, after the male birth control, I'm like, I don't know where to go.
Have to say?
HB, you take this first.
Well, why don't you take this one first?
Okay. With a little bit of trepidation. I'm sorry.
There's a long silence.
Jordan, can you help us out here? What do you think?
I think that
would
it's
you
not
go?
Necessarily. Well, I mean, I'm not a smoker, so I wouldn't particularly do that. But I don't think it's a trend because there have always been kind of like ladies' nights and ladies' clubs that, you know, try to get away from the male element every once in a while. So I don't necessarily see ladies only as being a new trend, but the fact that they're promoting this a little bit more and entering that more masculine space of, hey, we're going to go smoke cigars together. Yeah. That's pretty cool to me.
Well, males are usually the more aggressive species on a night out.
And I've heard women?
Yes, I've heard plenty of horror stories from my wife where it literally is just a girls' night. They go out to drink wine and have a dessert, and they are hit on by strange men. Yeah. So it's I think it's
that's
a good
a fair
thing.
Point.
That's just a Tuesday afternoon
or a Friday morning at GPB. Okay. I don't know.
Nobody's hitting on you here, Greg Williams. My guest today, music blogger Jordan Stepp, conservative talk radio show host Greg Williams, Korean Daily reporter HB Cho, and Natalie Dale of the Georgia Department of Transportation. And as always, we want to say a big thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we serve the guests on our show and that I drink. You can find them online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay, the City Council of Fayetteville, Georgia wants to build canals downtown. They're like canals that would look a little bit like Venice, Italy. But they commissioned a study. That study showed that project would not be cost effective, and that leaves us with a very important question.
Do you dream? Or should I say, can you put a price on your dreams?
Okay, so that is our question. Look, would you rather that your city council members always follow the research, or do we want them to sometimes dare to dream big?
I'd like them to be wise stewards of taxpayer money. And this sounds like a canal to nowhere, following in the footsteps to the bridge to nowhere that's been built all across the U.S.
Natalie?
I agree. It's if you're a private investor, if you're a private startup that has private funding, yeah, there are some great things that have been made. There are some great ideas that have come out because people dared to dream and because people said, people may not know that they need this, but I'm going to show them that they need this. And it has. But when you're dealing with taxpayer money, that's just not the way to do it. That's not the route to do it. We have, working with the Department of Transportation, we have studies for a reason, and they show what the cost benefit is. And if this says there isn't a benefit to the cost, then you're spending taxpayer dollars, and it's just not the best use there.
But I think there is a trend of these suburban cities in Atlanta wanting to have their own little downtowns. And I'm pretty sure Fayetteville residents are voicing that opinion of wanting to have their own little, redevelop their downtown. And out of the droves of this kind of very similar, bland, small town feel, you know, walkable, playable, livable downtowns.
Swimmable.
Why don't you stand down?
Will they charge 100 euros for a gondola ride?
Come on. Jordan, what do you think here?
Look, my dream of a downtown includes, you know, bike lanes and no potholes, not necessarily a canal. I get the idea that you want to dream big, but maybe not a canal.
We are in the middle of a drought.
My dream is also no potholes.
Okay, while we're on the subject of dreams, the dream for many voters for this election to be over is nearly come to fruition. We talked to some first-time voters earlier this week. They're not that excited to cast their ballots. Here's 18-year-old Taylor Stephenson. She's a student at Decatur High School.
For the past few elections, I've been wanting to vote in them, but I was too young, obviously. But now that we have two people that I don't really agree with on either side, it feels a little awkward for me to vote in this election. I just feel like it's just a back-and-forth argument between Trump and Clinton, and I personally do not think that's a very healthy relationship for our country.
Now, Taylor, despite her reservations, is going to vote, but I wonder how all four of you respond to somebody who says they will not vote.
I have this conversation all the time, and, you know, the top ticket race obviously gets the most attention, but in Georgia, we have four amendments that are very important to the future of the state. And the past couple weeks on my radio show, I've had experts on both sides of the first three arguments. The fourth amendment, basically, the fourth question is basically a tax on fireworks. But the first three are very controversial and very important for people to read. So I encourage people to make sure they vote all the way down ballot. There's a phenomenon called ballot bleed, and that's where the top ticket will have a certain number of votes. And by the time you get to some of the state House, state Senate elections, 20% of voters will have gotten bored with voting.
Which is odd because those are often the local ones, the ones where they have the most effect,
It's a bizarre phenomenon, but it exists, and it's really bad because those, you're right, the local government is the one that's going to be putting the canal in.
Right. I mean, to go back to Jordan, right. The president is not going to be fulfilling your potholes. Jordan, what do you say to someone who says that they aren't going to vote?
Well, I mean, my first vote was in the election for Obama, and I get the hope and the change, and you're not excited about this election or you're just dreading it, but you have got to at least look at the other measures on the ballot. You've got to look at the amendments. I couldn't agree more that it is so important to look at the other races, especially the ones that affect you on a local level. Even if you just get to the presidential one and, I don't know, write in my name or something, you have got to vote and have your voice. This is your voice.
Are there two P's in step?
Silent. There are.
And an E. But
you're silencing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, this is the one thing that you can have in common with both the person on the street and the millionaire next door or whatever. You all have one vote. You've got to use it.
It's pretty passionate. Either you, HB or Natalie, you want to follow that?
Even if you are staying on the, even if we're talking about the presidential choices, if you're not liking the two choices that much, that it makes you want to not just show up and vote, then send a message to the either the two-party system or the primary system that each of the party uses. And low turnout is not going to send that signal. Yes, do you know, maybe write something in or you know, do a third party. But even so, I think sending a message that you don't like this current system,
yeah,
we need to change. That's a effective way to, you know, send.
And show
message.
Show up for midterm elections.
Yeah,
for heaven's
sake, school board elections.
Show up for those. Don't just show up for the presidential ones.
I'm just glad that this time next week we won't be absolved of the conversation, but it'll be a different conversation, and we can begin to just move on.
Hope a more positive
can
one.
Start,
more
we can start talking. We can start talking impeachment.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun.
Oh boy! If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. Oh God! Music blogger Jordan Stepp in Athens, Georgia Department of Transportation spokeswoman Natalie Dale, Korean Daily reporter HB Cho, and then conservative talk show host Greg Williams. Okay, one little more thing about the election. It's more about how to avoid the election. The Weather Channel has promised, quote, zero election coverage on November 8th. Its nine-hour chill marathon will include some very calming weather videos and music. So is that attractive to you? Would you go to a channel that would let you escape election returns?
I'm excited that the Weather Channel will be focusing on weather. I hope that the Food Network is also focusing on food the night of the election. We will obviously be inundated.
You're such a traditionalist.
We will obviously. I like to know what I'm getting myself
Maybe
into.
Maybe the History Channel should do history.
But they're going to go with history of elections and presidential history.
There's nothing
there.
More relaxing than watching a nice hurricane video.
or
like a tornado, like an F5. I mean, that really chills me out when I want to watch relaxing
Just
TV.
Go do some cat yoga. If you don't want to watch the election, go do some cat yoga.
They should go more indirect and poetic route. And if Hillary's leading in the opening the counting, they should show like a beautiful crumbling wall on a beautiful European castle or something like that.
What are they going to show if Trump's leading?
I'm not too sure.
A
wall being built.
We're not going to answer any of this.
A beautiful work of architecture being built.
we're gonna not answer into that. Let's move on to something completely non-election related. There's new research out that shows some Uber and Lyft drivers discriminate against African Americans. The study was published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. It says in Seattle, at least, where they conducted the study, black passengers sometimes had to wait up to 35% longer for their rides.
There's a Uber X that's like 3 minutes away. There's an Uber Black that's like 15 minutes away. Should I just Uber X?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't want you to think I was being stingy with the Ubers.
So, representatives from both Lyft and Uber have told the New York Times their companies do not tolerate any form of discrimination. Do we think that if a driver is found to be discriminating, they should be fired?
I need more information on this just because, well, you, is it more, is it the name, because on this article that we're reading, it's is it the name of the person that,
it's the name, and also
the
sometimes
location?
The profile has a picture.
No, it's probably the neighborhood that you're picking them up
from. That's my thing.
I mean,
is it geographical location? Are there Uber drivers who, for safety reasons, are avoiding certain areas?
I've been signed up to drive for Uber for more than 3 years now, and basically the address will show up to the driver. And that would be most Uber and Lyft drivers do it part-time, so they're not likely to just get get excited about a fair that's
picking
somebody.
Okay, but they controlled for area actually.
Okay,
so it very often is because when you get the drivers see a name and sometimes if they've updated the profile a picture as well. Jordan, where do you fall in this?
I mean, I don't really use Uber, but I'm not surprised. I mean, I've heard of some of my friends struggling to just get a taxi. It's not really surprising that this is continuing to be an issue.
I guess when they control for area, I think they control for the areas there the customers are being picked up.
Mm-hmm.
But when Uber drivers choose to pick up somebody, then they see the photo of the person and the name of the person, and they don't see where they're going, right?
Yeah.
So if your experience as an Uber driver tells you that if you pick up a black passenger, you're more likely to end up in an area that you want to avoid, then I think that's something. I mean,
that's making an assumption that I think is a little bit
well,
dangerous.
The pictures of the passengers does not show up. The username will, and it'll show you what street they are and the estimated time for where you physically are to be able to go get them. And so, and I would say the driver experience, a lot of times in the poorer neighborhoods, they want to go on errands. They want to go shopping. They want to go pay bills. So it can be a fare that you're basically just driving somebody around for 3 hours to, pick up groceries, which is not a lucrative or profitable fare. So I would imagine that drivers have kind of done their economies of scale.
I think we have to be, be very careful.
In this situation, if several customers were rolling up to McDonald's to order and the person behind the counter asked an African American to step aside and served the white person behind them, there would be
absolutely.
No question.
Right.
And so we're seeing this in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanksgiving. Let's move on to something which I know will rile up everyone. Thanksgiving, a few weeks away. I don't know if you guys have already started planning what dishes you're going to make. I certainly do a lot of cooking for Thanksgiving. One dish that I make, because three of my grandparents are from the South, is collard greens, and I bet it's on a lot of tables.
What have you got in that kettle? What does it smell like? Malodorous, fetid, and stultified.
You ain't even close. It's collards, onions, and fat back.
Okay, so if you are not in the mood to whip up some homemade collard greens, you can order them. Or you could from the apparel company Neiman Marcus. Their collards cost just $66 plus $15 for shipping. And at last report, at least according to NPR, they found out that Neiman Marcus is now sold out of their $66 to $80 collard greens. Would you buy them?
No.
Oh, God, no.
I just picture some person living on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and they're like, y'all, I am so Southern. I got collard greens from Neiman Marcus. Like, no.
And the Black Eyed Peas from Saks Fifth Avenue. I mean, they have just a retail Thanksgiving.
On the back for being so authentic, and it's like, no.
Yeah. No, I mean, when you, it makes, Neiman Marcus is making Whole Foods look like Costco with these prices. It's for the bargain collard green guy.
You can buy the full Thanksgiving Day feast for the low cost of about $500.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Jordan, would you buy the collard greens from Neiman Marcus?
Oh, God, no. I mean, they had, little bacon bits in it. Who puts bacon bits in their collard greens?
Neiman Marcus.
They're
wrong. They're so wrong.
It's bacon. It's French, actually.
Bacon.
Bacon.
Bacon. You remember Bacos?
Yes, Bacos are great. Yeah.
HB, you haven't weighed in on this yet. Would you buy order food from Neiman Marcus, especially collards?
I've been saving up for 3 months to do my annual shopping at Gap for Thanksgiving. So no, I'm not going. I'm not spending at that scale. It's just crazy. I'm hoping the people who bought, who ordered the collard green for $80. Are actually YouTubers who are trying to find this so ridiculous. They're trying to do a taste test.
Oh, that's an optimistic
hope.
The
Pepsi challenge with collard greens.
You're hoping that them selling out of these collard greens means that Neiman Marcus is in for a lot of being made fun of.
Yeah. Guerrilla marketing.
It's a bunch of rich, sarcastic people who are buying these. That's a good hope.
All right, we have about 3 minutes left, and I want to go to this very last thing. Speaking of government spending, there is a city in eastern Spain that is fed up with all of the dog owners leaving their dogs waste around the city. So they are going to create a dog DNA database. Police will take samples of dog stuff that is collected by street cleaners to and analyze it. And owners have until December 31st to get their dog to a vet so that there can be a blood sample taken free. And those who fail to register their dog's DNA will be fined. What do we think about this? I mean, if you have the money, I guess.
If you start registering dogs, they're going to register guns next. Don't do it.
That seems extreme. But nobody likes dog poop on their lawn or park.
I've been to Europe many times, and I feel like the stray dogs is sort of like a European characteristic. Like you go, you're like walking around Europe and there's like stray dogs
everywhere. Or South America.
Or South Georgia. There's a lot of stray dogs everywhere. So how do they know? I think that this is just a gimmick to get the people who refuse to get their dog tested to be fined. That's where they're going to get the real money here, is the people who are refusing this are going to be fined.
Oh, and you're thinking this city's going to make money.
Yeah.
Because people won't take their dogs in.
It really is really high-tech way to address a medieval problem, really.
Right.
Yeah, I would hope that they would use it for some sort of, like, lost dog registry. You know, if they have the DNA on file and you lose your dog, then maybe they can find it easier. But that's just me being optimistic.
With a 25% unemployment rate, Spain has a lot bigger problems, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, but you don't know. Do you live in that town where they're inundated with dogs? This could be jobs created, though.
I want to live in the town that's biggest problem is tracking down dogs by their poop.
Well, I know where you need to move then. We can get you that information after it's over. By the way, speaking of the collard greens at Neiman Marcus, Jordan, you complained about the fact that there are bacon bits and San Burnham tweets. I bet it's turkey bacon.
Oh, God. All the biscuits in Georgia had to chime in.
It's veggie bacon.
All right, we are out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to all my guests, music blogger Jordan Stepp, Natalie Dale of the Georgia Department of Transportation, reporter HP Cho of Korean Daily, and talk show host Greg Williams. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's throw this question out to our listeners, though, because I know how passionate many of you are about your food. Would you buy these collard greens for Neiman Marcus for $66 or maybe another price? Let us know. You can call us and leave a message at 404-500-9457. Tweet us at OST Talk. I am at Celeste Headley. For today and the week, that's On Second Thought from GPB News. One more thing. Next week is Election Day. Please go vote. Have a great weekend.